study of Bhagavad Gita with the usual chant. You have the sheets, please follow. Vande Vamsidharam Krishna Smayamanamukhambujam Pitambaradharam Nilam Malyachandanabhushitam Radha Chitta Chakurendum Sandarya Sumahodadhim Parat Parataram Devam Brahmananda Kripa Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Grathitam Puranamunina Madhe Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusandadhame Bhagavad-gite Bhavadveshinim The verse we chanted says that Bhagavad Gita is our mother, very compassionate, but also very disciplinarian. She wants us to become a good Bhagavad Gita, wants us that we achieve the goal of our lives, and therefore, like a conscientious caring mother, she does what is necessary. There is a difference between what the love can do. If the person that loves like a mother, very much attached to the children, does not do the right thing for the children. She pampers them, whatever the children likes, she gives that to the children, does not look what is ultimately good for them. She tends to give what the children ask, rather than what is good for the children. But a good conscientious mother does not give all that the children ask. She knows what is not right for the children, and therefore even the children keep on asking that, she refuses to give them that. And whatever she knows that is right for them, even if the children dislike it, and she gives it to them. So Bhagavad Gita also is mother, very caring. She is called mother in this, that Amba. Amba means mother in Sanskrit. But how is this Amba? Bhavadveshini. She destroys this bondage of this creation. she does not keep the creation, because creation is a bondage. Our entanglement with it is a bondage. Creation, destroying creation doesn't mean that she will throw atom bombs and things like that, and that is reserved for some other people, but it is how Bhagavad Gita destroys this bondage of world. She makes us see the truth, that God alone is real. The world is superimposed on it. Like when you see a snake in darkness, you feel that there is the real snake there, but when you come close, you see that it was the robe that was appearing as snake. Now, for killing the snake, what needed to be done? Just only to know that it is rope. So, this world that we see, with so many problems, so many difficulties, it is really God alone. All different names, forms, all that we see is really God alone. All the multiplicity that we see has no other basis but God alone. It is so many analogies are given to explain that, but the thing is, this truth is to be thought about, meditated upon, and gradually it has to seep in our consciousness, it has to become our experience. And the practice for this begins by infusing ourselves with tremendous self-confidence. If there is no self-confidence, we cannot achieve anything. That is the first condition for any progress or evolution. We have to have the self-confidence. And second thing that we were talking about last Friday, and that is about a great spiritual quality, a great quality to achieve success in this world, and that is the quality of forbearance. The verse that we discussed last time was Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukkhada agama payino nityan tan stitikshasva bharata. That the sense organs, they are the measuring instruments, and the things that they come in contact with are the qualities that they measure. When the eyes, they see the forms, they measure. They take a measure of colors, the shapes, the sizes. The ears, when they measure the sounds, like how loud it is, what is the pitch, what is the frequency, and all that. The ears take the measure of the quality of sound. The other sense organs like taste, smell, touch, they also accordingly measure. Like we have a foot rule to measure the length of something, size, length of something. We have a thermometer that measures the temperatures. We have a barometer that measures the pressure. So we have that meters which measure the amperage and resistance and all that. So we have these different meters which when applied to those objects, they give you the measurement of that particular quality. So our sense organs, when they come in contact with the objects, they give you the measure. And this measurement is sometimes pleasurable. The same measurements sometimes is painful. Pleasure and pain are the reactions generated. They are not constant. The same sensation will not always be pleasurable, sometimes pleasurable, sometimes painful. Like if you like something, if you eat a little bit, you like it. If you like coffee, yes, a sip of coffee you would feel nice. A little more, okay. If you are given a big drum of coffee, you won't like to drink that. So it is, you will feel after a while that is not pleasant at all. So it is like that, that something that appears to be pleasant at one moment doesn't remain or doesn't appear pleasant later. Same sensation, but it's whether it is pleasant or painful is not fixed. The sight of something appears pleasant at one time, then not pleasant at some other time. When something that you like, say a nice dance going on, you want to see, watch, but suppose you have gone, you're going there, and then you heard a very bad news, somebody near and dear to you passed away at that point. Would you like to now see that? You will not like that. That will not look soothing at all. You would like to get away from that. Things like that happen, friends. That moreover, something that is pleasurable to one is not pleasurable to another person. The other day we had a concert of classical music, a vocal concert. Those who like that, they were happily listening to that. Those who didn't like that kind of music, they were terribly bored and were not at all enjoying it, and they wanted to run away from that. So what is pleasurable for one is not pleasurable to other. Things keep on differing. So another important thing about it is that they are conjoined to each other. Pain is a necessary condition of pleasure. This is the problem. We seek pleasure without pain. That is an impossibility. Pain is necessary condition for pleasure. In fact, pain forms background on which you paint the picture of pleasure. So usually pain of background has to be bigger than the picture that you paint. So therefore the pain is usually more, much more than the pleasure that you get. And therefore a wise person, what the wise person has to do is to look at them without and getting swayed by those. That is forbearance. Not that the person does not feel the sensation. The sensation will be felt, but it will be looked upon without any reaction. It is not that you won't feel pain if you are giving an anesthesia. If an anesthesia is given, they give that Neoquine in the that for if you have to do some tooth surgery, then that is injected. So then what happens? You don't feel the pain. That is not what is happening here in this particular person's case. This wise person senses the pain, but that person forbears it, looks upon it with equanimity. That yes, pain will come in life, pleasure will come in life. It is not possible to have the pleasure without having pain. The quality of forbearance is very necessary. In our today's society, we are just eliminating it by giving so many things to remove the experience of pain, forgetting that by doing so we are also removing the avenue of pleasure. It is, pain cannot be removed like that. They have different painful situations will be created in life again and again. Life is like that, pain and pleasure. And it is not dependent on what you have and what you don't have. Like some people are some people are suffering because they are married, some others suffer because they are not married. What to do now? You know, it is, sometimes you feel that it will be nice to get married, and then that somebody was telling me the other day that marriage is not a word, it is a sentence. So, so afterwards, when you realize it, that then you feel the pain about it. But then look about the other people are suffering because they don't get, they have not gotten married. So suffering anyway, it is the part of life. So it doesn't depend on, don't think that if you get something, the life will be all sunshine and happiness. No, that won't be the case. If you feel that yes, if I get rid of this particular problem, it will be all nice. No. One problem will be replaced by another. They are waiting, you know, in the wing. Just when this fellow goes, I will get in. So, all these things. And suppose a situation comes where when there will be no problem, the life will be so boring. It is, it will be, the life itself will become a problem then. Because what to do? Now we invest our energy and time in solving the problems. And we feel a sense of happiness. Yes, I tackled this situation so well. It was terrible, painful, but I tackled it so well. Now if there is no such situation, you won't have that satisfaction either, that look, I conquered that situation. So you will not have anything to do in life, anything worthwhile to do in life, because there are no problems. So therefore if there is no problem, you will bring one problem and keep solving it. Like the person who is, I know some people that they are those cleaning maniacs, you know, they want to clean things, always are brooming and brushing and like that, cannot survive without that. So I used to tell one friend like that, that if there is no dust to do vacuuming, the fellow will bring some dust. Now put it, and because he has to do the cleaning, you know, unless, this is, we cannot live without problems. It is, therefore, a wise person looks at these things with equanimity. That is called titiksha, forbearance. It is a great spiritual quality. Should not become perturbed just because there is a little pain. Just because there is some uncomfortable situation, well, that will go away soon. It doesn't stay long. Even if it stays, it ceases to be uncomfortable after a time. So, therefore, one should not get perturbed about that. Keep the goal intact. It is, yes, I have to proceed there. Pleasures and pains, they will come on the way. Don't get worried about them. There will be, like when you are going somewhere, some roads you can go very fast, some roads are narrow traffic roads, so the speed limit is less, you have to go slow. Sometimes you get into thick of traffic, sometimes there is a clear this thing road. So what do you do? Do you get perturbed because of that? Some get, but one should not. By getting perturbed, not that your journey becomes faster. It is, therefore, learn to look upon these things as coming and going. Agama painaha. They come and go. In the requisite qualities for practicing the spiritual disciplines of Vedanta, one of the qualities required is this forbearance, that one should practice this. We get unsettled, ruffled by a little something that goes against our mind. I want this to be like this, not like that. Mood is off for 3 days. So that person cannot do spiritual practice. It is for spiritual practice, and the heat and cold, some day it will be nice and sunny, some days it will be very cloudy and rainy and cold. Doesn't matter, it is, that is also beautiful. I know a gentleman, whatever may be the day, he says, whenever I meet him, "Oh, what a nice day," he says. "So nice, cloudy, wonderful. Does it not look wonderful, cloudy? And if it is raining or snowing, look how nice the snowflakes look." It is all that, you know, if you have to shovel the snow, "Look, I didn't get exercise for some time, you know, and this is how I am getting exercise. I don't have to go to gym." It is how to, you know, transform these things in our life. That is a wonderful science. It is with that one can then do spiritual practice. In Shankaracharya's beautiful book, Viveka Chudamani, he defines this quality of titiksha as that sahanam sarva dukkhanam, forbearing all the pain, whatever that may be, without grumbling about it, without grumbling, without complaining, without blaming others, just bear patiently. And this is a quality that one must develop. No complaints, because what is the use of making complaints? Just keep on focused on the goal. Just as you don't worry about, keep on thinking about why there is so much of traffic. It is traffic comes on the road because there is road. It is traffic. It is, sometimes we say, "Oh, why so many people on the road today? What about you yourself?" Everybody would be asking the same question about you. Why you yourself are there? So it is. But therefore we should learn, friends, to forbear. Situations will be sometimes pleasant, sometimes non-pleasant. Therefore next verse of Bhagavad Gita immediately says that unless you develop this quality, you will not be able to reach the goal of life. It is, what happens if you develop the qualities? Shri Krishna says that the 15th verse of the second chapter, yam hi navyathayantyete purusham purusharshabha samadukha sukham dhiram somrutatvaya kalpate. O best of men, that wise person whom these, means the pleasure and pain, do not affect, who is equanimous in pleasure and pain, is fit for immortality. That person can attain to immortality. So this is the ideal that we should keep in front of us, that pleasures and pains come. And Bhagavad Gita is a very practical science. These are the practical things that we face in life. Pleasures come, pains come. And if they unsettle us, then we will be thrown out of our gear. And then our progress will be scuttled there itself. Therefore, it is important that pleasure, pain, let them come. Sometimes somebody will praise you, sometimes somebody will blame you. It is always going to happen. Don't get puffed up when somebody praises you. Don't get depressed if somebody puts some blame on you. that is going to happen in the world. And there is a nice incident that I had described you earlier, but it's nice to remember that there will be always pleasures and pains, praise and blame will go on. That once I was traveling in a train, and then that train got delayed again and again. It had to stop because on that track ahead of our train, there were derailments. One train got derailed, and so till that thing is removed, we had to wait for another 2-3 hours there. Then we started, again there was a derailment of some train, again we had to halt. In fact, we took, instead of 24-hour journey, we required 48 hours. So it was an ordeal. So in my compartment there were so many people, and they saw a religious fellow seated there. So some who were not against such religion and this thing, atheist, or didn't like the Swami, they said, look, because the Swami is in our train, the train is getting late again and again. And I heard it, and I didn't say a word, but there were some others who didn't agree with that. They said, no, you see, because Swami is in our train is not getting derailed, the one in front of us that is getting derailed. So you can look at it at any way, you see. So the thing is that there will be praise, there will be blame. If somebody blames you, okay, well, that is natural. How can you be nice to everyone in the world? Nobody could do that. Even Jesus could not be nice to everyone. It is not possible to be nice to everyone in the world. So don't worry about that. Some people will be blaming you. And don't take that. 3 days people don't sleep otherwise, that fellow said like that to me. Why should you get perturbed about that? Whatever that fellow felt or thought right, said, why should you get perturbed with that? It is a practical situation, friends. I get so many complaints like that, that look, what to do, Swami, you know? Why should she say like this to me? Now, why you are asking this to Swami, first of all? Go and ask her. But again, secondly, we have the freedom of speech. I tell them that, look, we have, the Constitution has given us freedom of speech. So let her say what she wants to say. Why you have to go by that? Let her say what she wants to say. And why you should change your life because of that? And why should you lose sleep because of that? Sleep peacefully and let her say what she wants to say. It doesn't, if it happens in the school children, that is understandable. But even the grown-up people, you see, it happens to them also. That somebody says a word, this man or woman will find it very difficult to digest. It is this quality, therefore, you won't be able to meditate. Try, friends. Always that thought will keep on coming. Why that she said that to me? Are you meditating on God or on that? So one has to learn this. This is practice. That pleasure and pain, play praise and blame, that will come in life. Sometimes you will be given credit that you did not deserve. Sometimes the credit that you thought you deserve will be not given to you. And such things will happen in life. This is the nature of the things. So one should take it with equanimity. And that is to our advantage. It is to our advantage. Our betterment is whose responsibility? My betterment, my progress, is it not primarily my responsibility? My betterment is not the responsibility of my neighbors or my colleagues or my enemies. Why should they take up that responsibility if I myself am not taking it? My betterment, my progress is primarily my responsibility. And therefore, if somebody is hurting me, usually it is not the case. Nobody really is out there to hurt us. They have lot of other business to do, no? Not that their only the purpose of life is to hurt you. It is not that. And yet, even if taking for granted that somebody is hurting you, why should you add your own share to that hurt? Why should you hurt yourself? Let that person be hurting you, but is it the reason that I should hurt myself? If somebody has, say, cut one finger of mine, is that the reason that I should cut another of mine? It is like that, you know, that why should we hurt ourselves? Therefore, pleasure and pain, praise or blame, one should learn to be facing this with equanimity. This is a very practical virtue, friends, that is required for the spiritual progress. It is spiritual progress is not achieved by giving lectures from the pulpits. Lectures, anybody, I give lectures, what does it matter? Giving lecture is not spiritual practice. This is spiritual practice. That, yes, practice these things. Pleasures, pains, praise, blame, they will come in life. Now don't get perturbed because of them. People will say this, that, okay, let them say, why should I not allow them to have their opinions? Let them have their opinions. Let them air their opinions. Fine. But that doesn't mean I should act according to that. So, therefore, Sri Krishna tells Arjuna that this is an important principle for practice, that unless you do it, you will not be able to progress much. Practice forbearance. The pain threshold in some people is so less. A little pain and that's it. They cannot take it anymore. But one should increase that. Yes, what happens if there is a little pain? And for that practice, some people therefore do fasting. That yes, otherwise why fasting? Fasting as such has, only fasting has no spiritual value as such. Keep on fasting. But as a discipline, to discipline oneself, it is very good on occasions. That yes, I have the tremendous desire to eat. If I do not get something at that particular time, the balance is off. If I don't get coffee in the morning, then it is very difficult to do anything positive. So, to free oneself from such conditionings, it is good to say, practice fasting. Yes, I will not have any food on, say, one day. You fix a day in week. Don't think that you will die because of that. First of all, you may feel when you start that, okay, I will not take food on every Saturday. Saturday is in a way good because on Saturday, if you don't have to go to work, it is good that day to try that first. After a while, first there will be reactions, terrible reactions, because we have not learned to discipline ourselves. So the feeling will come that I am going to die. If I don't take coffee now, probably this is the last 5 minutes of my life. It is such funny ideas will creep in mind that if I don't take or my food, if I miss now, see how weak I have become. It is, but stick to it. Forbear. That is the practice in forbearance. That a little pain, a little disappointment, a little change in what you always expect, that is good. And so that you will be able to practice it. Don't stretch it too much. In India, some people, it is stretched too much. As if fasting itself is spiritual progress. Fasting is, in general, it is not spiritual progress. But as a discipline, it can help one to practice forbearance. So, many other things can be taken up, not just this. Like we are used to suppose listen to or watch TV at a particular hour. I know one gentleman, I was in Shillong and there was burglary at his home and the TV was stolen. When he had gone away somewhere and came and then told me that the TV is gone, oh my goodness, then what? Well, first I will have to go and buy one because I cannot miss that particular show or something. So, can you imagine the fellow after coming from outside, instead of doing other pending works at home, he simply, first thing he did was to buy a TV, this thing. Because without that, he cannot think, he cannot see that the day is being used properly. Has to have a TV. There was a survey that the American survey, that what Americans consider most important in the order of how much importance they, and it is worse. Many people thought life to be impossible, not without electricity, but without chocolates. Can you think of that? It is, and it was a big proportion, you see. So, it is, now how can you think of this if we think life is impossible without chocolate or without electricity? We put the cart before the horse, that we made electricity or electricity made us. It is we made electricity. So we exist even without electricity. And whether we made chocolates or chocolate have made us, we existed without chocolates. So it is, therefore, we have to understand that this pain and pleasures, we have to increase that level of forbearance. The pain threshold or the disappointment threshold in some people is very low. A little disappointment it is difficult to for them to conduct the day in a normal way. And in contrast, it is very good to see that how the life takes a very positive turn. It is, I have seen many people, and really it is blessed to be in company of such people. There you understand the meaning of these words of Bhagavad Gita, that yes, it is, these are not things just to be studied from books, but by looking at the lives, that yes, there were pains, situations which would have caused pain, but the person just without even the smile on the face didn't go away, and was just forbearing it as if nothing really has happened. It is in many, many torturous situations I have seen people coming and with equanimity and no complaints against anybody, no feeling of enmity against anybody. See, this is a practical exercise that we have to do to make ourselves capable of realizing the highest truth. It is not that by just reading the books or listening to lectures this will come in life. This is matter of practice. And after telling this, Sri Krishna is a great psychologist. Looks at the psychology. He prepares Arjuna for this and then tells a philosophically very important truth, that how to judge what is right and what is not right. For that you have to judge also what is real and what is not real. And to judge what is real and what is not real, you have to find a criterion by which to judge it. And this criterion is provided in the next verse. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate satah, ubhayorapi drishtontah stvanayo tatvadarshibhihi. The unreal has no existence and the real has no non-existence. The conclusion about both these has been seen by the knowers of the truth. That which does not exist never can be, even if you are perceiving it. And that which exists can never go away. This verse is a bit tough to understand, but we have to pay attention to these words and to the implications thereof. That how do we decide that something is real and something is unreal? Our reactions to the world, they are based on whether something is real or something is unreal. Our attractions in the world, which consequently bind us, they are dependent on a very strong sense that they are real. The moment we understand that it is not real, that attraction or the opposite of it, repulsion, will go away. The apple that I want to eat, I know it is real apple and I am attracted to that for eating. When I go close and hold it, I see that it is made of clay or wood. And then the desire to eat that also vanishes. It is not apple, it is looks like apple, but not really apple. So whenever something is realized as not real, our attraction, our drag or pull towards it goes away. It is with everything. The attraction depends on that strong sense that it is real. Then the attraction will be there. When you know that it is not real, you won't feel attracted to that or be perturbed by that because it is unreal. I used to cry as a small child when I would go to movie, those melodrama type movies, and then there would be a lot of crying and all that, some painful incidents. And then my mom used to be with me, then I would keep on crying, oh, why this is happening like this? Then my mom would just wipe my eyes, say, oh, it is not real, it is only, actually, it is, there is nothing there, it is only the screen, it is only screen, nothing is there, it is not real, it is only picture. So, when it is picture, you don't get the desire to go and correct it there. You know it is just a picture. You don't then get the desire when you see movie and you see somebody holding a gun about to shoot somebody. You don't get up from your chair to drag the gun out from that man's hands. You know that you cannot prevent the murder there if it is script in the script. If it is there in the script, you can't prevent that murder. So it is, when you know that it is unreal, you do not bother about it. So understanding the unreality of the world is very important. Unreality of you as body, and unreality of the whole perception. There is, you know, a confusion that many people who study Vedanta get. that they feel that Vedanta says that the world is unreal. So they see, oh, how can I then see? They rub eyes again and again, that why do I see it then? Vedanta does not say that the world that you are seeing is unreal. Along with the eye that is seeing the world, the whole perception is not real from a different point of view. It is real only at that plane. Like the happening in the movie, that is real at the level of the movie. Beyond the level of the movie, it doesn't have an existence. Like you thought that, let me take out the gun from that fellow seen in the screen. I can take out away the gun from him and set those so I will prevent the murder. You won't be able to. But another fellow in the movie can do that. A police officer in the movie has the capacity to do that. A real police officer will not be able to do anything. But a police officer in movie has the capacity to do that because they are at the same level of existence. So our present level of perception or existence is only relative. It doesn't have an absolute existence. That is the idea of saying that the world is unreal. It is not that I see I am real and then all Vishwanath is not real. That is not the that will be a foolish thing, you see. It is not that the idea of Vedanta saying that the world is unreal is including the person who is seeing, that also is unreal. So it is like the dream. In the dream, when you wake up, you say that it was all unreal. It was all unreal. And the unreal means, what was unreal there? The food that you were eating in dream, that was unreal food. And the one who was eating the food in dream, that also was equally unreal. That was not real. It was at the same level of existence, same status of existence as the food in dream. The eater in the dream is existentially at the same level as the food that you saw in the dream. Both are equally unreal. Or you, if you like to call real, say equally real. When you wake up, both of them become nullified. Both of them are understood to be only fig of imagination, something that you saw in dream, and therefore you don't pay attention to that. And you don't say that, well, I ate so much in dream, now I don't feel hungry. And you again need your breakfast. Yes, yes, it is unreal. I didn't really eat, it was all in the dream. So, how do we decide that something is real and something is unreal? We need some criterion. Vedanta is very scientific. And just not imaginary that, yes, I will call this real and that unreal. Should not be left to somebody's making such statements. There should be some tangible criterion to decide that something is unreal and something is real. How do we to decide that? A very challenging question. A very big question in the Eastern as well as Western philosophy. How to decide that something is real and something is unreal? Now, if the question is asked like that, that what is unreal? Can never be answered, you know, because when you answer, you say that it is, then how can it be unreal? If I say that Vishwanath is unreal, I first say Vishwanath is, and then I say unreal, so that I affirm the existence. It is what is which is unreal. There cannot be anything which is unreal. So, and yet we have this experiential knowledge that the reality of certain things is not a constant experience. Something appears real at a time, not real at another time. Like the dream that we were seeing, I was seeing that I am eating a nice 5-course dinner. And, well, when I wake up, all that is gone. And so I say, had it been real, I should have been perceiving it and now also as real. Now also I should feel that I have really eaten well. And now I don't see that. I know I couldn't have eaten. I found myself lying on the bed when I woke up. I remember I went to bed. I woke up on the bed. There was no possibility that I could have gone to that fabulous restaurant and have this big dinner. I couldn't have gone by in that time and come back. It is not possible. And so you conclude that you have what you saw in dream is only a dream. It is only imagination. Although when dreaming, and you were considering it as real. When wake up, then you see that because that experience cannot be now verified, now it when tested, it appears to be non-real. So its non-reality is verified because that experience of reality does not continue. The experience of that reality of that state is limited only to that dream state, and therefore it is not real. Now apply the same to our waking state experience. The same experience that we have in the waking state becomes nullified in dream, just as the my eating 5-course dinner in dream doesn't satiate my hunger in the waking state. Similarly, even if now you go and eat a big dinner and then sleep, it is no guarantee that in dream you will not feel hungry again. So, waking state experience also is not substantiated by our dream state experience. And if dream state is unreal because it is not substantiated by our waking state, then by the same token, this waking state too is unreal because it is not substantiated in our dream state. So we shall discuss this verse further. It is a very important verse. Because here it is our perceptions are subjected to scrutiny for its status of reality, whether it is real or not. A very important question, that what is real in this world, we need to know that. And the search for truth is basically search for what is real in our experience, what is real. And this verse, therefore, is very, very important verse, and we don't have much time right now, and we will discuss it by the grace of God next Friday. If you have any questions, you are welcome to ask. Yes, Jamuna Bhai. Yeah, it is purification. It is very true that it imparts purification because of forbearance. You become detached from the influence of the world. And thus that makes you look at the immortality of the self. Everybody, each of us is immortal. But we get identified with the body. And thus body is not immortal, body comes and goes. It was born, it decays and it dies. And if we are identified with body, when I say I am body, then with the birth of the body I am born, and with the growth of body I am grown, with the death of body, even though I don't want, I also die. But when you know that you are not body, just as you know a photograph of yours, it is not you, howsoever beautiful you can take it, but that is photograph. So you know that it is photograph. When the photograph is taken, not that you were born, only the photo was born. And if the photograph is torn, you are not torn, nothing has happened to you. So this detachment comes from learning to equanimously see the pleasures and pains of the this existence. So it makes you focus more and more gradually on the unchanging, unaffected self who is detached from the body. And thus, when you are detached from the body, there is really no meaning to the word death. It is not that kind of immortality that you drink something and then your body will continue for indefinitely. Not that kind of immortality, but the immortality because of complete dissociation from body. The body is born, the body grows, the body dies. I remain unaffected by that, just as taking up a picture and tearing of the picture, it doesn't affect me. What is body? It is a picture, a form. Instead of picture, to give you just another analogy, you can make a three-dimensional statue. Same thing. Body is also a statue made of bones. That's all bones and blood and some, that is some robotics is there in that. It is a robot. A robot is like that, you know. You can see the robots that they do all these actions, and this is a kind of a robot. So, it is, are you that? Nobody will like to be compared to that. Yes, you are the body. All this dirt and filth, are you that? No, you cannot be that. So, therefore, you get this this feel, which gradually this feel develops into experience that I am not the body. And thus now there is no meaning to the word death for you, and thus one attains to immortality. So let us conclude with the closing prayers.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanya Shastra Vistarai Yasvayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvinesrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namani Yani Karma Pyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Sri Krishna Arpanamastu.